The following is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It's getting warmer every day. I mean, it is approaching the official start of summer, and it feels like it. So, hope you're taking care if you have to be out for very long. I've got tomorrow taking off from the day job, so I can try to get yard work done. I'm gonna try to get started early because this is like the hottest time of day. Really, from 3 to 5 is the hottest time of every day. So be careful if you have to be out in this. I think it's supposed to hit 90 today. So welcome. Anyway, I hope everybody doing well. Welcome in. It is The Drive. Bill and Dan. We're rotating producers / board ops. Don't want to just call them board ops. I mean, they're producing the show. Carter has hung around from on the line. I thought Graham did a good job yesterday. Did you guys decide that was it? One's enough, or you're not going to overburden him?
I think he's got something he had to do today, and that's why
he said yesterday.
I was supposed to be doing yesterday's show in the original plan, and he asked me to switch it up with him because he had something he had to do today.
Oh, okay.
He did a fine job. A little slow on the draw, firing the commercials going into the breaks, but that's new. But he's new.
Well, you got to get used to who's saying what and how they're going to go into the breaks.
But he did it. No, he did a great job yesterday. He really did. Yeah, I figured he was at wrestling practice or something right now, and that's why he couldn't be.
Yeah, he has something like that.
Also,
he said he'd found
where he could continue working out.
Bill, I think there's some rain coming in before the end of the show today, according
to
Apple.
I saw like a 30-40%,
which may keep it from breaking into the 90s, like you said. But it feels pretty close
there right now.
Yeah, it feels pretty close there right now after being outside a little bit.
Yeah, so anyway, we'd love for you to join in. It is The Drive, and hour number one is brought to you, as usual, by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They're also the sponsor of our hotline. That's one of the ways you can get through to us. Probably is the main way you can get through us right now. Drew's usually the guy. Can we check the text box?
I don't believe
so. See, that's why I'm thinking, okay.
I think maybe someone else, I want to say Riley, has access to it somehow, but he's not in the room right now.
Because they usually get forwarded to me.
Right.
I don't see the direct texts.
Right, and some of those texts, they might be wondering where the podcast is with Apple and Spotify, which is something that I promise you is getting resolved. As we speak, we're working on it. I have an update.
It's out of our hands.
You got an update? Yeah, I'm told by the boss, and I think I can disclose this publicly. I'm told that since we switched over the podcast had to be reviewed by Spotify and Apple before they could repost it, and so they had to get an episode of it, and we're being reviewed right now before they can relaunch because I guess we switched providers, or we switched something, some technical deal, and so now I'm under the impression it should be soon that we will be back uploading to Apple and Spotify. In the meantime, you can get the show on ESPNAU.com. You can get the show through Google's podcast platform. ESPNAU.com probably the easiest way to access the podcast at the moment, but the Apple and Spotify thing is it's under review, and there should be a resolution coming.
Yeah, we're just waiting for them to green light it for it to be there,
and we'll be we should be back on those platforms pretty soon.
The Kia of Auburn hotline though is working as best I know. You guys had a call in the show, didn't you? Today?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we know the phones are working.
Yes,
though.
Yes. That's the main point. We had a guest there in the
second
hour.
Oh, that's right. So that means Chris, obviously means Chris the phones Corey. Were working. Yeah, mm-hmm. So The Kia of Auburn hotline is 334-321-1390. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? Yeah, I heard y'all's interview with Chris, and I agree with a lot of what he said. But when you were talking, and they were talking about all the representatives, and I do think maybe it was a little more than needed. But, I mean, hey, if anybody can get a trip to the nation's capital, I'm all for it. That's fine. Go ahead and do it. But, I mean, Auburn sent a contingent that included Dr. Chris Roberts, Hugh Freeze, Bruce Pearl, Johnny Harris.
Cohen was there?
And John Cohen, yeah. So the president, the AD, and the head coaches in football and men's and women's basketball. And I think, I mean, I saw pictures of some of the legislators with Alabama folks, and there were at least a half a dozen of them. So It appears multiple schools sent multiple representatives.
Yeah, I saw the South Carolina contingent with Tim Scott, I think, Don Staley, Shane Beamer. I saw a picture of them, and then, of course, I know the Alabama or the Auburn reps met with Katie Britt and Tommy Tuberville up there. I think they may have given Katie Britt an Auburn football jersey.
Yeah, I saw number 26.
Her husband's.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would think that. I mean, they would not want. I mean, I think it made sense to bring the women's basketball coach for some of these programs as well. Like, you know, I think people would think, oh, well why wouldn't you just bring maybe the biggest names in your athletic department? But I think some representation from, especially after the season women's basketball just had, it makes sense to have Don Staley and, for that matter, Johnny Harris as part of the contingency. And I think also the optics of having having the photo ops are a little bit more diverse with Johnny Harris having brought there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they saw Mike Rogers, too. I mean, there were tons of pictures. But, yes, and that's one of the things that I wanted.
NIL is huge in women's basketball as well. So, I mean, it absolutely impacts
the
sport, too.
But things are changing and have changed a little bit, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing multiple representatives there. And one of the things that your guest was, Chris, was saying about 45 minutes ago was that, you know, it's no big deal. It's just the old people. The concerns is just the old farts concerned about young kids having money. No, the concern is more and more of the collectives are not able to fund all of the sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a couple of folks from around the South that their people at their schools are concerned that there's nothing Title IX can do about this. That this is money that's coming in, and it's not just going to be distributed to all athletes or all sports. And quite frankly, that's what NIL couldn't really be dealt that way. If it's just based on your popularity, how big a name you have made for yourself, it's something that I don't see how anyone could come in and say, well, now we're going to level this out.
Yeah. And a lot of kind of collectives have ways for you to kind of earmark where you want your money to go.
And the word is that right now football is extremely popular here at Auburn. I mean, Hugh Freeze has really created a buzz, but there may not be as corresponding
I would think that
contributions to a couple of other sports that had been expected.
I would think that the NIL the donations, as far as when they're specifically earmarked for a program, I would think they correspond closely with the popularity.
That's true.
And there's probably nothing you can do, across industry wide to require NIL funds to be distributed evenly across the sports or across the genders or something like that, which could absolutely create an imbalance. And there are going to be, and I think this is true for every sport except football and men's basketball, there are going to be, if the NIL rules don't change drastically, what you're going to see is you're going to see superpowers. You're going to see Oklahoma softball in other sports.
60-1 right now, by the way.
You're going to see that because their NIL operations are going to be so much more. Imagine Tennessee women's basketball, right? Uh-huh. Like you could envision a scenario where Tennessee and UConn and a couple other programs are lapping the field in women's basketball. I don't think it's that far-fetched in baseball. Mm-hmm. If a couple of places really said, you know, we're going to dedicate
Mississippi State.
What's the
A&M? Accumulate a bunch of money right off the championship that they won.
Yeah, and there are rumors that A&M is offering eye-popping sums of money.
A&M has deeper pockets than anyone else.
And I would imagine
that's just a fact.
There are places like that. So I think it's a threat. I think it's a threat to competition because you could absolutely see just death stars forming in different mm-hmm. sports. Because
that's what Nick Saban is up there mm-hmm. about. And Auburn fans will roll their eyes and go, well, who cares? Well, you may if a couple of places just have more resources or
it seems fair. It feels to me like too many places want to win in football and men's basketball for that to be like an existential concern. Now we could have, depending on how many, we're talking about how many Death Stars we're talking about. Like, I don't know if one football program is going to just lap the field versus everyone else in NIL because so many places I think want it. In the smaller so-called non-revenue sports, you could see scenario where somebody just wants it more and they're going to create a dynasty and how many other people are going to be bidding against them in those.
I mean, what Auburn has to worry about and every school really has to worry about. I mean, you see some players leaving in the transfer portal and you're wondering what's the problem with the coaching staff, and maybe mm-hmm. there's a problem with the coaching staff, but it may well be that they can just they have better opportunities monetarily somewhere else.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that has happened. I mean, I think that the best example right now of a non-revenue sport in Auburn, I guess the best two examples are women's basketball and softball. You saw absolutely. So many players exit immediately after the season, and that kind of NIL opportunities was where a lot of people's minds went.
Yeah, I mean, I think the rule of thumb with the transfer portal is if a player leaves and they weren't going to get a lot of playing time, you understand
why. Oh, absolutely. There's no nothing that makes you go about that.
If a player who was going to get all the playing time they wanted decides to go into the
when pool, one of your best players
you could have and when multiple examples of that are happening, you could have a problem on your hands. To Hugh Freeze's credit with the football program, and I guess the NIL powers that be deserve some of this credit too, you look at the guys who left in the portal, and we've said this, we've observed this a few times, Bill, with your depth chart. Like, the guys who left, there weren't too many of them that looked like they had a solid spot on the two deep.
Right.
Like, it makes sense that pretty much everyone who, this offseason, virtually every player who left Auburn, you could say, with the possible exception of, I don't know. I mean, who Keandre? Maybe? Like, I mean.
Well, I mean, he's been gone for a little
bit. Oh, that's right. No, who would it be? Who would be the offensive line? Was there an offensive lineman who left? Who?
I mean, there was Colby Smith that left for Troy.
No, that's not.
No, but Keandre left back in the before spring.
I mean, I would say this cycle, the only ones that jump out to me that you would have seen really record any stats this upcoming year had they stayed would have been Chick Dawson, Landon King, and it would have been very limited. And then,
although if they
Dylan
were gonna,
Brooks, just by depth chart bodies, like he would have been on the field. At some point.
I mean, it's these are guys who, did not have a solid spot on the two deep, and so it's like, and I mean, Jeffrey Imbaugh's in that category too, where it's
fair.
Like, yeah, these are guys who look.
Yeah,
like,
he probably was. Jeffrey Imbaugh was of the later guys was probably the guy pegged to play the most.
Yeah, and Keandre left in the first portal window, but he was probably. Of everyone who exited Auburn via the portal this cycle, the guy who looked like he was in line for the most playing time in 2023. But I think it's also telling that when you had as many players as Auburn lost, that you're really not looking at very many. And that's a difference from – it's different than what other programs are going through, where they're losing guys who look like they were going to play a lot because they're looking for a more solid situation or possibly a better NIL deal. And it's also – a contrast with what Brian Harsin was dealing with. Because it felt like under Harsin, you were losing guys that looked like they were in line to play a lot. Really, before both seasons under Harsin, you had situations where guys who had who were in line for a ton of playing time decided they were going to go play somewhere else for other reasons.
But I had someone today tell me that one thing that is a little concerning is there doesn't appear, at least right now, to be as much focus in NIL contributions towards basketball, period. Men's and women's, it's more toward football.
Now,
and that's something you'd get a little concerned about.
Now you're talking specifically at Auburn.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wasn't it earlier this offseason when Bruce was saying right now the focus doesn't need to be on
Doesn't
need to be on donations to Auburn. It needs to be on donations to Auburn's NIL to attract talent, because that's the lifeblood more so than the way recruiting, the way facilities and other on-campus amenities used to be the most important thing you could focus on.
If you
on.
Build it, they will come. Now it's if you bank it, if you've got it.
I was going to ask earlier when we're talking about maybe the imbalances right now in terms of where NIL money is going. Could this be something at Auburn you see kind of level out? There's just such a sense of urgency to get football
right. Oh, I think so.
And it's almost like a situation where if football's right, a little bit of rising tides lifts all boats a little bit.
To a point. But my thing is, there's also going to be a point at which it's going to be tough to expect that level to continue on a consistent basis year in and year out. And that's something that everybody's worried about, because if the players are expecting X amount and all of a sudden that amount isn't there, will everybody be in that situation or just certain schools?
I'm not predicting this is going to happen at Auburn, because Bruce is great at playing this game, but I think we could see more Calipari Stoops situations where this fight over resources spills into the public. Because people forget, that starts with Calipari wanting Kentucky to invest in new facilities for him, and being told that Kentucky basketball isn't at the top of the line anymore, and John Calipari thinking, well, does Georgia's football coach hear that when he needs stuff? Does Alabama's football coach hear that when he needs facility upgrades? Because that's where...
Is Alabama's what coach?
Is Alabama's football coach.
Oh, I was going to say Alabama's basketball coach.
Georgia plays at Super PAC.
That's
national,
right.
Perennial conference champion, national champion type programs. Like, that doesn't happen. So I wonder if you're going to see more scenarios where...
I think that's...
I mean, what if...
It's almost impossible to imagine that not happening.
What if Chris Beard starts getting more than his share of the NIL contributions at Ole Miss, and Lane Kiffin starts missing out on players because of
that? That's something I've wondered about, because part of the sales pitch, the public sales pitch for bringing Kiffin back, was you saw the Ole Miss fan base commit so much money to NIL, and I wonder if that's going to kind of handcuff Chris Beard here.
Nope.
Initially.
They might have a better roster. They have a better roster now than half the league.
When you've got Kentucky with seven players.
Yeah, when they've been able to go out and win like four or five battles in the portal for players that other schools wanted, and they got the top two players from last year to come back. Like, I'm stunned. I talked to a guy who covers the SEC more in depth for the Observer podcast last night. He said, if you're talking past Tennessee and Arkansas, there is an argument that Ole Miss has the third best roster right now, 1-8 in the conference. And it's like, that is stunning to hear, when I remember this was a last place team that fired
their
coach.
That's how quickly you can turn it around.
I think the scenario is more likely that football starts losing players because Chris Beard gets this thing rolling and starts getting money that used to go to football coming to the Ole Miss basketball team. Because right now, like, he's hit the ground running like nobody in recent memory in year one.
And that's
they're going to affect
basketball.
Each other.
And that's where I think it could come up with some big problems, in that promises made and then the money doesn't continue to come in, it diverts to another area, something like that. That could be a situation, and all that's going to do is then lead to another large exodus of kids into the transfer portal. All right, we're just getting underway. Love for you to join in anything you want to talk about sports-wise as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
Time to churn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Carter at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Let's see. I mean, as far as there's obviously not a whole lot going on here locally. You've got camps going on.
We can probably promote what's the downtown art walk going on because we're going to have Auburn Network representation there. I think we're going to have
Friday.
I think it's Friday night. We got the art walk going on, which is always a cool thing downtown. I saw somewhere on social media that Auburn Network's going to have we're going to have some the station vehicle and some of our crew out there. So come say hi if you're in downtown Auburn. And I think if the weather cooperates, I would encourage you to check that out.
Oh yeah, and the weather looks fine. I think for tomorrow night. Today's the best chance of rain for a couple of days.
Usually a really good time.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, as far as sports, you know, I think there are a few folks still competing in track, but, I mean, everything else is done. But summer camps are going on. Man, are they going on. I was talking with a fella today out toward Tigertown, and he said it's been amazing seeing all the high school football and basketball teams that are in. He was mentioning naming some of the teams that were in. Carter, you were talking a while ago. I mean, a couple of the in-state schools, the 7-on-7 camps going on. There's a defensive line camp going on. So there's a lot of, you know, potential future college players, not just Auburn. They're going to be players that are going to be going all over the place from these groups that are in.
There's also a basketball camp going on campus as well, because I know the number one running back on three in the state of Alabama.
His name with his basketball team,
yes,
right?
I think he wandered over to go watch part of the camp is what I saw here in the last 20 minutes or so. But, yeah, you've got a lot of talented players on just normal visits and a lot with their teams participating in these camps.
Yeah, and they've got, official visitors coming in this weekend. So there'll be bits and pieces of news there. I mean, one of the interesting things that folks will want to start hearing about, and they'll be going on, and they'll start pretty quickly, and that is the official, those captain's workouts, the workouts for football. I mean, you know, we've already read about Peyton Thorne working with receivers and the guys checking in. I guess everybody is in, with the exception of Bobby Jamison, Travis, and DeQuavious Story. Everybody else is in and at least, going through physicals and getting orientation and getting workout programs.
Now, does everybody include the junior college player, Champ Anthony, or is that a later arrival?
I believe he's in for the second session, okay. Which that starts 3 weeks. Though, so he'll be in pretty soon.
You suspect Auburn is probably done adding to the 2023.
I think so.
Roster, and do they have spots? Do they have spots to reward walk-ons, or does it depend on?
Does it depend on
whether or not these two
get in? It's going to depend on whether those two get in or not. Auburn's, I think at, I think they're at 85. If both of them got in,
right? And I would guess, assuming they don't make any additions and there aren't any defections between now and the start of the term, I would think Levant and Sean Jackson would get those two.
Yeah, I would think so. I think
get those two scholarships.
Since they went through the workouts this spring, I think they'd need to know.
And they're,
you'd need to know whether you're going to have to pay your tuition or not.
Well, you know, and I wonder in the case of both of those guys if they could have found a scholarship elsewhere in the portal, too, which is another reason why they should probably
know. Yeah, Sean Jackson, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a guy who – Sean Jackson, technically a walk-on if you're looking at the scholarship limit. It's sort of a question of, you know, were walk-ons awarded scholarships kept on scholarship? I think that the understanding is that that's a one-year sort of deal. But they could also be. I mean, I would expect to see both those guys on the field this fall, right? I mean, you think Levant and they
were on there for every special team. I mean, they were every. Sean was on for both kickoff coverage and kickoff returns, and Jake was on for every kickoff coverage.
They weren't just two guys watching from the sidelines, you know, having been rewarded scholarships before the season. They were on the field.
No, Sean has a chance to, you know, get some touches offensively
well.
I think he's going to get some carries. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a ton, but I think it could be
a short yardage guy.
More difficult for Levant with
the linebackers now that Auburn has.
And you're generally going to be a nickel most of the time now. You're only going to have two linebackers out there. It's a lot of bodies to kind of wade through to get out there on the field for him.
Yeah, so one little tidbit I saw somebody sent me that that Auburn is had listed J.C. Hart as a receiver, and now they're listing him as a DB again.
Interesting. Okay. A player.
I wonder, just because they've added quite a few receivers, and he was a guy. Did Auburn add somebody late that looked like a true corner? I don't think so. So I mean, I think JC is going to be interesting to see where he works. I mean, his athleticism gives him the opportunity to work on either side of the ball. But I mean, Auburn can look at him wherever they feel like they might need just, you know, an extra person push.
Feels like this is going to be a year where defenses in the SEC play a lot of defensive backs. You know, there's more and more teams are comfortable throwing the ball. You're going to want insurance at, I mean, six different spots in your in your defensive backfield. So I think understanding that you probably need somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 or 10 guys you feel comfortable putting out there at defensive back. You know, getting somewhere in that range. And if J.C. Hart is a candidate to do that, and he's not necessarily profiling as one of your top six receivers right now, there's probably a better chance for him to play early as a defensive back than there is as a receiver.
And we talked about it when Champ Anthony committed. I mean, you look at the guys who most likely won't be back after this year. Auburn has an awful lot of either seniors or draft-eligible players there in the second.
And it gets questionable when you get into guys, you know, do they want to take that fifth year? Would they want to take that sixth year? I think it's safe to say that a lot of the players that look like they're going to participate at corner, at safety, inside corner, like anywhere at defensive back for Auburn, they look like guys that are going to, you know, a lot of them look like they're playing their last year of college football.
I think you got to feel really good about where you sit at corner right now. Safety
right now,
little,
for sure.
Yes, safety's next a year though is a little more different. Oh yeah, for sure. Safety's a little more of a question mark. I'm of the opinion, which this may be a little bit of a hot take, I think Auburn's got 5 NFL corners on campus right now, with DJ James and Pritchett are both getting drafted after this year. I think Kayan Lee, with what he's done to come in and how impressive he's been, I think he's going to be a future guy. I think J.D. Rim has that potential, and then you have Keontae Scott at nickel. I'm including him in that group, and I think
I want to see a little more of J.D. I mean, he was injured some this spring. I want to see a little bit more of him. The early returns on Kay and Lee are just phenomenal.
Yeah, I wonder what Keontae, because Keontae dipped his toe in the draft process, I think, and came back, and maybe it was pretty early he decided to come back. I wonder, you know, what sort of feedback he heard. I think you're probably on the right track.
Keontae probably has to run really well.
Yeah, and there are
he's not the biggest guy.
I mean, at safety, you've got guys who, I mean, between Jalen and Zion and even Donovan Kaufman, like I think you've got guys that could stick. They're less likely as draft picks probably than the corner guys you listed, but I think those are three players, and Kaufman's more, I guess he's more inside corner than safety now, but those are three guys that also belong out there at least for a quality SEC defense without necessarily projecting what they're going to be as pros.
I think right now, I mean, at safety, I think Simpson's the only one that I would be like may have some sort of chance if he has a huge year at getting drafted, because
I have no idea.
He's a little undersized.
Puckett and Kaufman, just with their injury history, Puckett's shoulders, he just can't keep those shoulders healthy. If he could, I would feel a lot better.
We were thinking earlier in the offseason
he might come down.
No, that if Auburn was going to make an addition to the defense, it was probably going to be a veteran safety to back up Simpson and Puckett, because in one, it would push either of those guys, but also if something were to happen, and you mentioned, I mean, but I mean, Simpson's been hurt, but I think more the other two guys.
No, Zion's had more injury problems. Yeah, I'll tell you, the guy that it was good to hear his name some this spring, and I'm really interested to see if he continues that progression, is Marquise Gilbert, who was coming out of junior college, was so highly touted, we didn't even see him last year. He's got good size.
And there's a ton of freshman safeties coming in, too, that could be investments down the line, but
one of Marquise Gilbert's only snaps last year, I just remember him looking like a deer in the headlights and letting somebody catch
lost
a touchdown right in front of him, and he just didn't move.
Yep.
He didn't touch him.
But, I mean, he was a guy that was pretty highly thought of when Auburn brought him in. We're way behind.
Let's take a break.
Yeah, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, we've got Carter at the controls today, and let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Terry is up. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dan. How's it going?
Doing all right, Terry. Good to hear from you.
Good. Great. Great talk to you, as always. I thought it would be interesting to hear a little bit about the staff. So I've never heard – I don't think the staff's getting near enough credit. We know about Hugh Freeze, but could you guys maybe consider going over the offensive and the defensive staffs sometime? Unless, because I think there might be some names we're not as familiar with, we need to be familiar with, quite honestly. Well, I mean, everybody knows Cadillac. So, other thing, what do you guys think the running back rotation will look like minus Hunter, if that happens?
Well, I think that you're going to see Damari Alston and Brian Batty really battling for who the starter is. Jeremiah Cobb, obviously, is someone who his playing time would really increase.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't have Jarquez, although right now I haven't heard anything to indicate that he won't be there.
I want to take exception to the phrasing of that question. Like without, I mean, here's the thing: Jarquez Hunter is currently, as far as we know, you know, there's been no official update to his status with the team. I think that if at the moment he appears to be the starting running back. Beyond him, like Bill said, it's probably Damari Alston and Brian Batty battling. We were just talking about Sean Jackson earlier in the was that on the air? We were talking
yeah,
about
it
Sean
was.
Jackson.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, Sean and Jake probably as your two scholarships if you don't fill them on the 85. Sean Jackson, Cadillac's a big fan of what Sean Jackson possibly brings. And then there's Bill. What do you know about Jeremiah Cobb and what he could do as a guy immediately if thrust into playing?
Well, you know that's a position. Obviously, that if you're good enough, you can play and play early. And I think he's mm-hmm. good enough to be able to play early. He's got, you know, he's big enough. It's not like, oh, he needs to come in and put on 15, 20 pounds or anything like that. He's around 200 right now. So Auburn's very fortunate to have a situation like they do at running back. So if somebody goes down, they still have plenty of depth.
And if you get in some sort of jam, you have Hugh Freeze's running back at Liberty last year is still sitting out there in the portal with nowhere to go yet.
Oh, so I didn't even realize that.
Day-Day Hunter, who ran for 850 last year, I think, he's still sitting in the portal as of right now.
I really like that Sean Jackson. I really like him. He's a guy I think you get first down and goal at the four, you could pound him three or four times and get into the end zone.
Well, you hope, and you hope your offensive line is one that can line up and get a push. That's something they just couldn't do a year ago.
It'll just make me laugh to see a 5'9", 240-pound back getting the ball. It's like Mike Tolbert.
Yeah. Well, that's why we need to go over the staffs because, like I said, guys, I'm not familiar. I bet a lot of people aren't as well. Everybody knows about Hugh Freeze and, of course, Cadillac, but the staffs. I thought that'd be something interesting to listen to.
All right, interesting. Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Terry. Yeah, I mean, so we talked about them more when they got hired. You know, that was when we would go more in-depth about guys like Philip Montgomery and Ben Agamawa, Marcus Davis, Cadillac Williams, who are – am I forgetting somebody? Those are your four offensive.
I think you got it.
Yeah. Who's on the O-line? Who's the O-line coach?
Oh, Thornton.
Yeah,
Jake Thornton.
And Jake Thornton. Like those are your offensive assistants.
So if you want a little more info, I mean, if you're not really familiar with the guys, obviously Philip Montgomery has a long, long
Philly gun.
Track record.
He's was Baylor's offensive coordinator for the for much of the Art Briles tenure, including he was the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach when Robert Griffin III had one of the great seasons statistically in mm-hmm. the history of college football, winning the Heisman at Baylor about a decade ago. He was the head coach of Tulsa the last few seasons,
mm-hmm.
It was mixed results at yep. Tulsa, but you know, I always
place to win.
Well, not just that, but also a coach is more than just where he was most recently as a head coach. Like mm-hmm. especially when you hire a guy as a coordinator. Like, you need to look past just what he did
right.
in his most recent place. And there's some really impressive stuff on Philip Montgomery's resume. You know, how much this feels like a guy Hugh Freeze would be comfortable you know, delegating the you know, much of the offensive responsibility to.
Yeah, and then somebody who's not even you know, an on the field coach is Kent Austin, who's been you know, who's been Hugh Freeze's quarterback's coach and was a CFL head coach. I mean, of course, played at Ole Miss, but there's another. So they've got a multitude of coaches who have very good track records with quarterbacks.
Montgomery had a run there from Houston into Baylor, where he had Case Keenum, RG3, and I'm drawing a blank on the Baylor quarterback.
Bryce Petty?
Yes, yeah. They got drafted by the Jets. Like, there's he had some guys that put numbers.
I think maybe they missed each other, but I want to say he was involved in the recruitment of Jarrett Stidham.
I think there was a brief overlap there.
Yeah, I think that he may have recruited him.
Yeah, I want to say maybe that.
Yeah, I think that was what it was.
Like, I think the year before is his year, but I mean, there's a little, you know, the timelines are.
His last year at Baylor was 14.
Right, and Stidham was, I think he was high school class of 15, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't an NFL guy, but he brought in Seth Russell, who put up big numbers at Baylor as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, Philip Montgomery is an impressive offensive coordinator based on his track record. I can understand why, you know, if you were hiring him as your head coach, you might be uncomfortable based on how the Tulsa job ended. But as an offensive coordinator, this guy seems like more than capable of leading an SEC, especially a wide open sort of, you know, what we think of with these Hugh Freeze offenses at Ole Miss and at Liberty. I think that it would, you know, it appears to be a really good fit.
And, you know, the position that everybody had been so concerned about coming in was offensive line. And Jake Thornton has been at Ole Miss the last couple of years. They really did not want to lose him. I mean, Lane Kiffin did not want to lose Jake Thornton, a young, dynamic. He's an energetic guy. I mean, he's great to talk to. But, I mean, you look at Ole Miss's offensive line, didn't have a bunch of superstars on it, and has played pretty darn well the last couple of years. I really, really like, you know, what we've seen from Jake Thornton. You mentioned Marcus Davis, the former Auburn receiver, who has left, gone out, and made a big name for himself. He's one of those guys. I'm trying to remember who was the guy that is the person that coaches go to and universities go to for the deep, deep stats on coaches. I mean, it's a name that you hear in a lot of coaching searches. I can't recall the guy's name, but he had Marcus Davis pegged as the hottest young
receivers coach. Yes. Analytical.
Yeah.
So what Marcus Davis did at Georgia Southern was really impressive, because that was a place trying to do.
Oh, they were changing from the option
when you're
to
switching
to a pro style.
When you're switching over from the triple option and your offense previously looked. I mean, Auburn played them in 2017, and they had some of that still working for them then. I mean, they were a triple option attack for a very long time. And usually, Georgia Tech's a good example of this. Usually, when you try to make over a team from a triple option attack to something more traditional or something more modern, or however you want to, more pro style, whatever, it's a long, tedious sort of transition, because it's different from what these players were recruited to do, and it's different from what these players were coached to do until your arrival. Clay Helton at Georgia Southern quickly turned them into one of the best passing offenses in the Group of Five when they were a triple option offense forever. Clay Helton deserves a lot of credit for that, but so does Marcus Davis, his receivers coach. Like that's where, like, I mean, what they were able to do is, I mean, it was one of the more impressive stories of Group of Five football last year, because like that should have taken a very, like, they were way ahead of schedule, and the numbers they were able to put up last year were quite impressive. And on top of the fact that he's an Auburn guy and he's, you know, a former Auburn player who was making a name for himself, for him to be part of that turnaround and a hands-on part of that turnaround as the receivers coach, I think it really bodes well for the future for Marcus Davis.
I mean, they ended the Scott Frost era and threw for, I mean, 400 yards in that game on the road at Nebraska. A couple other connections to Philip Montgomery that I forgot about. Kevin Cobb at at Houston for 3 years. He was his quarterback's coach. And the backup for those 3 years was Kendall Briles.
So wait, was he there with Sumlin? Was he or was he there post? Because I'm trying to, because Kevin Cobb was a, for some reason I want to say Kevin Cobb played for Sumlin at Houston before Sumlin
Cobb
took the
job. Cobb was there from 03 to 06.
Okay, and Sumlin was the head coach at Houston. When was Montgomery at Houston? Do you have that on you?
He was there from, I believe, 03 to, through 07
okay, so maybe
for Montgomery.
Philip Montgomery was there 03 to 07?
Yes, okay. And then you had, so Sumlin took over in 08.
Yeah, okay. So Sumlin took over in 08 for the pre. Okay, so that so they did not overlap at but yeah, because Cobb and the other guy played for Keenum. I want to say both played for Sumlin, didn't they? Or maybe Keenum was before. Cobb played for Sumlin a little bit before Sumlin left for A&M. But that's a no. But yeah, Montgomery's
had some prolific quarterbacks.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So the results are nuts.
All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Come on in and join us, the Kia of Auburn Hotline, 334-321-1390, as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
Let's get back to the drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one of the Thursday Drive with Bill and Dan Carter at the controls and joining in as well. We'd love for you to 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through. Did you see? I mean, I know you see a lot of things on social media. Did you see the little post yesterday from Braves? Carter, you're the big baseball guy too. Well, Dan is too. From Braves baseball memories yesterday, on yesterday's date, June 7th, 1982. Their memory from yesterday, the Braves, this was the draft was that day. The Braves selected shortstop from Ashtabula, Ohio, Urban Meyer.
Oh, wow.
From St. John's High School.
What? Yeah, I didn't know that one.
Look at
holy
this.
Holy cow.
Do you know Urban was drafted in the baseball draft?
What?
He's got a little porn stash.
Did you know Urban was drafted? Like in the baseball
I did
draft?
Not.
I'd never heard
I did
that
not know that. Well, maybe because he hit 182 in 2 years in the Gulf Coast and Appalachian Leagues before he decided to pursue other things.
No, that's impressive, though. That's very cool. There's
he was a pretty good athlete.
That's not what I thought you were going to talk about you were talk about the Braves.
No, I just saw that.
Taking down your guy, Pete Alonso.
Yeah, well. There's no love between those two teams.
Yeah, and there's lots
of bad feelings.
Now they're playing again tonight, right? So that could spill over.
Braves looking for the sweep.
Tonight's game with the Braves and the Mets. That's Verlander versus Strider tonight in Atlanta.
Should be a swing and a miss a time or two in that ball game.
I would think so. Verlander just 2-3 on the year with the 4.25
ERA.
It's
tough when you're 40.
And Strider,
it's tougher when you're 40.
One of the better.
He's fantastic.
What, after Gallen, maybe the second best pitcher in the National League so far this year,
as uncomfortable a guy to face as there is in the National League.
Yeah, Strider's going to be so. That could be a good one tonight. And like you said, yeah, Braves 7 games up on the Mets.
Well, the Mets aren't even in second place. Aren't the Marlins in second?
Yeah, I was just looking at the head-to-head win-loss records. Yeah. But still, you know, a lot of baseball left. And the Mets did lose. You know, they didn't have Scherzer for much of the much of the first half. So I think both the Mets and Phillies.
The Braves haven't had Fried.
That's true. For the division, we'll see what happens. But I'd say that both the Mets and the Phillies have reason to believe. The Phillies have reason to believe that they can.
Oh, the Phillies can just look back at last year and go, you know, we can. We're in better shape than we were a year ago.
I mean, it's unfortunate with the expanded postseason now, but it really is just about getting into that top six. You want to win your division, but I mean, just last year we saw the two teams from the wild card games, Philly and San Diego, advance from that stage to the NLCS. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's it keeps hopes alive for teams that struggled out the gate. And that's going to be, I think, for the Mets. And I think you can lump the Padres in as well as teams that did not have the start they thought they were going to have, but still have the underlying talent to probably make a push for one of those six.
Yeah, Juan Soto going 5-for-5 yesterday, and Gary Sanchez has been swinging the bat pretty well. Maybe, you know, Maddie, maybe he wakes back up.
Still under 500, but I think that's a team that probably will finish the season as one of the top
and
six.
And then there's the Fernando. National League. I mean, they've got such a talented team. All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in and join us in hour number two.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan with Carter at the controls. It takes multiple folks to fill in for Drew when Drew's gone. Drew is I guess he's probably up there in the Steel City of Pittsburgh today. He was up there going to be touring, checking things out. I believe they were going to be at both the stadiums as part of the time up there. So he'll be back sometime next week, so a multitude of folks filling in, and Carter is in today and got the mic open as well, so he's joining in along with Bill and Dan here in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'd love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Text box, it could take a little while for us to reach your text because I think those go to Drew. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast, which is available on most podcasting platforms, although like we said in hour number one, still working on fixing the Apple and Spotify channels, should be resolved soon. In the meantime, you can get the podcast at ESPNAU.com. You can go to RadioAlabama.net, or you can use Google and their podcasting platform. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind? One of the things we've talked about a lot here since last Thursday has been the SEC schedule. You guys were talking. I had not seen the details. I'm looking at it now. As the Big Ten today introducing its schedule for 24-25, and there are some similarities to what we had talked about with possible future SEC schedules. But they have sort of taken some variations from that. I'm looking at some of their terms that they have in here. Dan, yeah, you were talking about it, and interesting to look at how the Big Ten is going about handling 16 teams.
Right, and so they've decided, and there's even comments. If you look at Adam Rittenberg's ESPN.com piece about this, there are some comments from Kerry Kenny, the chief operating officer of the Big Ten, about different scheduling models the Big Ten explored, including having no games that needed to be played every year, having no designated rivalries or protected games. They also looked at 1 to 3 protected games per school and decided that the varied approach preserves the most important pairings while also creating a rotation that allows players to compete in every stadium. And this is the Flex Protect Plus is what they're calling it.
That's a mouthful. Flex Protect Plus. Now, so what they're doing is their plan is similar to what we
like
have
said.
It sounds
like a sealant.
It does, doesn't right? it?
Like it sounds like something that...
I mean,
that
sounds like, what's his name? Should be Billy selling, Mays. Putting it on the bottom of my boat or on my roof.
R.I.P. Yes. Billy Mays, yeah. But like he'd be selling that at late at night.
I think to the clip of the Rich Eisen show that I heard earlier this week, that he's like, oh, we just need to throw a plus on our show because everybody's just throwing a plus on everything. And that's exactly right. What that
Flex
feels
Protect
like.
Plus. But what their plan is every 2 years, they will have another... They'll redo the schedule, protecting those certain rivalries, but going to keep it along the same lines that we had talked about, where every team would play every other team at least twice every 4 years.
Right, and they also have, I guess they designate sort of temporary rivalries. They call them two plays, but they're games where...
Is that the Maryland-Rutgers one of those?
No, that's one of the 11.
Maryland-Rutgers is that a longstanding rivalry I've missed?
I think
the
they
years?
Wanted everyone in the conference to have one. Like that, I think because everyone in the conference is represented at least once on that list.
Yeah,
so,
I guess
will have an all three locked out as permanent opponents.
Yeah. I mean,
that's fascinating.
So if those,
yeah,
those
Iowa mean, has Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin
as permanents.
That has to do with like the trophies and stuff, right?
Yeah,
like
the old
wooden boot and the axe and the bucket.
I mean, well,
it's just interesting that they're the only school that has all
the
three.
Wooden canoe and what all the stuff.
Well,
that
when you look at the SEC, I mean, that's where Nick Saban complained. But it's hard to say that Alabama doesn't have rivalries with Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU.
Mm-hmm.
So the two-play system is where they designate a game and say, all right, this is going to be played as a home-and-home in 24 and 25, and then it could change.
Well, it probably will to make sure that everybody gets everywhere in 4 years.
So everyone's going to have an opponent. On top of those designated rivalries, I think everyone's going to have at least one opponent that they play at home and on the road.
Who came up? Who gets paid an awful lot of money and came up with two play and Flex Protect Plus. Somebody who makes a lot of money came up with those.
They test marketed those terms. And
those,
like, that's
and
the
let
one
me
that
tell you.
Leaders and legends?
Yeah,
I was going to say, those folks up there, I don't know about the markets that they're testing.
Is Penn State
at least
the big winner
that's
here?
Right. At least they don't have divisions anymore. At least we don't have to worry about that anymore.
Is Penn State the big winner here because they get to dodge having to play Ohio State or Michigan every single year?
Right. I think they are.
Which is why they mentioned that Penn State has drawn USC in 24 mm-hmm. and 25 because that's...
You've got to try to balance it.
But they don't have any like protected rivalries for every year going forward. They're the only one that does.
Penn State.
You're right. That's you're,
Penn
you're
State,
right.
Maryland. Yeah, you're,
no,
you're
Penn,
right.
Penn State is the one team not represented in the... Is that right? Is there somebody else that I'm not seeing?
No, that's the only one. They're,
Penn State is the only team not represented in the 11.
And it's not like, they're nobody... And it doesn't matter.
Is there a game in the Big Ten where Penn State? Because I'm not
the closest I could get is Penn State, Ohio State.
I was going to say Michigan State.
Ohio State's only got Michigan, right? As far as their permanent,
I would.
That's a little surprising that you wouldn't go ahead and.
I think it's surprising they didn't give Penn State somebody. I would have guessed Michigan State maybe, but like I don't know. And Penn State is, when you get past...
Michigan State's only, I mean, their only game is Michigan.
And Penn State's a relatively new addition to the conference, right? I mean compared to some Big Ten teams that have played forever.
But they have been a significant addition
to the
Big Ten.
So Penn State, doesn't get a mandated rivalry opponent. And I guess
that's fun. So Penn State gets to go, we'll just take turns playing everybody, but we don't have to play the tough ones every year.
Regularly.
I don't think the Big Ten wanted to give Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State every season. Like I think they look at Ohio State Ohio State's perennially one of the two best chances for the playoff. Like why would you load up?
Why would you do that? Well, because Michigan's got Ohio State and Michigan State. If you're going to give Michigan two, might as well give Ohio State two and Penn State at least one.
Right, and I'm surprised that
I mean, that sort of feels like what the SEC might do and go, okay, Nick, you don't have to play LSU.
Well, if Penn State was, if they considered Ohio State as the permanent opponent, if they did, then Penn State did dodge a bullet because you don't play Ohio State every year. And that's probably a good thing for you if you're trying to win championships.
Oh, it's absolutely good. Penn State's got to be celebrating.
In this scenario, because Penn State here in recent history has been pretty clearly the third team in that conference, right? This, in theory,
Iowa's had years, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and so has Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, right.
This clears a little bit of a pathway where maybe Penn State can sneak into a 12-team playoff more often, and you can have a conversation about potentially three Big Ten teams.
Well, I'm sure the rest of the Big Ten, the other 15 teams, are happy that the Big Ten has decided, okay, Penn State, you get the opportunity while we beat each other up. Let's talk a little bit about your team, though.
Good gracious.
Northwestern, for the next 2 years.
It's
going to be 24 and 25, right?
It just looks worse in 24 when you look at the away games. The away games are Minnesota, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, and UCLA. And then the home games are Illinois, Indiana, Nebraska, and USC.
Yeah,
but
so you got
Illinois and USC being the tough ones there right now. But that's brutal. That road slate is awful.
Is there a favorable home slate you can drop for Northwestern in the Big Ten, though? Like, is there? I mean, who do you look at because you're gonna get at least one and probably two superpowers.
I mean, making them go on the road to Ohio State, Penn State, and UCLA is pretty daggum rough.
Where's UCLA though in the grand hierarchy of the Big Ten right now? Right, like aren't they? Like that would be my question.
I think it's in the six to seven range, six to nine somewhere.
Six feels high, but I mean, but you know, as much as I love my Bruins, but
do you have Iowa ahead of them? I don't. They can't score.
Well, what are we doing? Are we last 5 years? Like,
yeah, last year.
Current state of the program?
UCLA's been, okay, Big Ten teams I got ahead of UCLA right now.
Because you're not putting Ohio State,
Michigan, Penn State for sure. USC, of course. Mm-hmm. And then who would be?
Purdue just lost their quarterback receiver.
I don't like Purdue there. Illinois had a nice season, but
defense is going to be good next year.
I guess it would be Iowa. I mean, probably would be. I know that they can't score, but like that would be just based on track record. I think UCLA's probably have a better year. But yeah.
Am I talking you into six now?
Yeah.
I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
I didn't realize how dire things were. Wisconsin's probably had a better last 5 years than UCLA, too.
How quickly are they going to bounce back from last year?
Nebraska's had a better last 50 years.
Not the last 10, 5.
I mean, Maryland's had ups and downs. No, I guess you're right. They're probably I would say depending on how you view Wisconsin and Iowa, like they're probably somewhere between six and eight.
Northwestern's had a better, more recent history than Nebraska has.
Yeah,
they've won the West twice in the last 5 years.
I mean, I think Nebraska's gonna that's one of those programs where they have to like where they have to like what they can do with an NIL world versus what they could do without it, because like they were running out of sales pitches, mm-hmm. and now at least you know some of the really influential Nebraska fans out there with money can maybe get them back into the fight for some
maybe
of these recruits.
They get to beat up on Colorado this next year.
I mean, that's their only chance, right, Bill? Right? It's you know they're going to need to become an NIL superpower and win kids that way because
benefit.
It's just hard to imagine. You think there's that much more money in Nebraska than there is in the Big Ten?
The benefit is
I don't know about. I
mean, there's not another school that's compete that they have to compete with in their state for NIL.
Right, but it's sort of like the state of Tennessee though. They've got to go outside that state to get talent. There's only so much talent in the state of Nebraska.
I'm saying just in terms of NIL dollars.
I mean, they are the.
You have all
yeah,
of
you're
them
true.
In
you're
your
right.
State.
You're
and,
right about
and,
that.
And do they have the you know the fans who were you know the old school fans who remember and then think you know maybe we can get back to that you know if we.
I don't think they're ever going to be like playoff.
No, it's never going to be like it was for Nebraska.
But you can get somewhere between better than recent.
God, I sure hope it could be better than that. I mean, just for their sake. But I really like a couple of the comments. I mean, you know, some of the SEC folks are like, well, you know, we don't want to lock into this nine-game schedule, lock into this. Well, I mean, look, the Big Ten's going on two-year increments. They're going to change it every 2 years. They're going to look at rearranging the schedule and changing some of those, some of the teams that are being played for two straight, you know, for for those over that 2-year period. So the SEC has nothing to be complaining about. I mean, there's no reason the SEC can't come up with something like this. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that some of the comments from Kerry Kenny saying, you know, it allows you to be a little more responsive to competitive trends, responsive to changes in the postseason model. I mean, they're sort of taking a shot at the SEC not being able to come up with something what the SEC's commissioner wanted to come up with, because there's no doubt Greg Sankey wanted a 9-game schedule. Oh, yeah. And the Big Ten is taking a little jab at the SEC going, well, here's one, and we've even tweaked it a little bit.
I just keep looking at – I feel like they're just bullying Northwestern, because last year you drew Ohio State and Penn State, and one of your 4 home games was in Ireland. So you only got 3 home games in your conference. It's that's rough.
So, that's back-to-back years with fewer home games than the rest of the league, half the league.
The article talks about Ohio State, Penn State a little bit. Apparently some of these schools were asked about their matchups that they'd want – protected annually, they you know, games that they felt like the term they use is non-negotiables, which I'm guessing are games that had to be played every year, and then they've got games they would like to play frequently but not annually. Penn State does not have a protected.
That's interesting. Yeah, as I read that they're going to play more teams 3 out of 4 years,
right? And so Penn State Ohio State will not be played in 2025 after being played at Penn State in 2024. So there's, you know, I guess they're going to it's an interesting approach. I mean, it's
so they'll probably play like Ohio State Michigan 3 out of 4 years each.
And I'll admit, I didn't think of, okay, well, let's take, you know, you don't have to, every team doesn't have to have the same number of rivals or games that they have to play. And that never crossed my mind.
No, me
either. That you could just have a list, and that list is however long it needs to be of the games in the conference that have to be played every year, and then you build from there, and it doesn't have to be.
That's how Northwestern gets stuck with that.
Oh, yeah. And congrats, Mizzou. If that happened in the SEC, you would be the Penn State, I guess, because you don't have any natural rivals.
Like they would get Arkansas or Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, they used to be Big Eight.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, now there's. I mean, there's a couple
Vanderbilt.
States. Couple states they border where it would maybe make sense. I mean, they'd be. I feel like there are a couple places. South Carolina comes to mind too, where it's like they don't have, you know, deep, long, you know, rivals that go back centuries or anything, because they're relatively new to the conference too. But no, I think that's a, I don't know, Bill. Like it, we're probably up against a break for this. But like, what do you? How long is your list of like games in the conference that need to be played when Texas and Oklahoma get in? Because I don't know if it's an even number.
No, I don't either. I mean, I think it's probably I can come up with most schools a game that it just feels like, oh, this is one that you'd miss if you didn't see it.
Some schools
it's probably
have
more than 11.
Some
schools probably
have
more than 11. I think in the SEC. Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm closer to those, but
I would want at least every school to have one. That's one thing that I think the Big Ten maybe should have looked at.
I
guess you have to gin up a rivalry for Penn State that way, but I think it would have been cool for every team to have at least one designated rival that they play.
I can't. I can't imagine not having at least one. All right, so we'll open it up to our listeners. What games need to be played in the SEC? The Big Ten had 11. There were 11. How many can we come up with that you really feel like these need to be played on a yearly basis in the SEC? We're not worrying about, it's going to make it too tough or we're leaving somebody out. Let's just, we'll do that. When we come back, we'll start listing some, and we'd love you to join in as well. 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 22 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday, and see how quickly we can turn things back to what we had been talking about, because we started talking about the Big Ten, but it now gets to, and I think this is fun. Let's maybe this is some of the conversation that's going on at the SEC offices. What
what rivalries, what games really need to be preserved. Don't worry about how many it is for any school, but what are the rivalries? But the easiest way for us to go through it is just start alphabetically. Yeah. Let's go through the SEC.
So let's start with Alabama. You look and how many without a set number of rivals, just
or a set number of games. Yeah, I mean 8, 9, whatever conference games.
Just thinking like how many games does Alabama play every year that you feel like in conference need to be on the schedule every year?
I think Auburn and Tennessee. And it's hard not to think about LSU because how much that one is missed.
You want to say you can give a school three at the most? Like
if we could give them three for Alabama, it would be Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU.
All right, try to keep track of the number of games here because that's three for Alabama.
And also keep up with the teams because we don't want those teams that we're giving. We don't want to assign a team three games before you even get to them.
Right, I could see this becoming a mess. All right, Arkansas.
Texas is the first school that comes to mind, and I think they're just chomping at the bit to be able to play Texas again.
Do you think Arkansas A&M is a rivalry that probably needs to be played every year? They play in the Cowboys Stadium. Granted, that's largely a creation of Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I mean, they played each other a lot of times, too, because, I mean, they were both in the Southwest Conference as well.
A&M beat them last year, on the lateral return for a touchdown?
I believe Arkansas and Missouri have played each other every year since Missouri came into the league. They've been the permanent opponent on the other side.
That's been sort of a forced to me, but I mean, it's not that far. I mean, it's been regionally.
Yeah, I think they had to find Missouri an opponent that made sense from the West, and Arkansas was
probably the westernmost team.
That's why we've had that weird South Carolina Texas A&M game every year, because those are the two leftover programs now that they've – because it used to be Arkansas.
We've got enough for Texas A&M now.
It used to be Arkansas, South Carolina when they joined the league the same year. They played every year as the cross division. When we added Missouri and A&M, Arkansas, Missouri became the cross division, and then there's just this random Texas A&M versus South Carolina.
Well, Texas and Oklahoma are going to help solve that.
Okay, so you think Arkansas the only
we can go Texas, Texas A&M.
What about Missouri? I was going to say they're cross-division rival. Maybe. You don't really care? What about LSU for Arkansas?
Maybe.
A rivalry that Arkansas seems to take a little more seriously than LSU. All right, so final vote here.
I'll just ask Texas right now.
Yeah, well, I'll throw Texas A&M there. We'll put Texas A&M sort of in pencil because I want to see what other ones we come up with for A&M.
All right, so that's five games total, three for Alabama, two for Arkansas. We've got
Auburn.
Next up in the conference.
Alabama
and Georgia.
Absolutely.
So that was one game we already had, and then another one that we've added to the list. So that,
I guess you absolutely, if max is three, you cannot go LSU because LSU is going to get
handcuffed
too quickly.
Yeah. I think that if we're going with
you've got to keep those two.
If you don't have to give a team three and you balance the schedule with the rotation and things like that, I agree. I think it's I think it's
Alabama and Georgia.
I think it's Alabama and Georgia, and that's one new game added to the five that we already had. Yeah. So that's six games total.
That's six now that we have set aside, and we've gone through three teams. All right. Next up is Florida.
Florida Gators are up next.
Florida, Georgia. So that's two now for Georgia.
And LSU. LSU's that rivalry there.
I'm thinking more
Tennessee than I am LSU.
Lately, because that.
Well, not just lately. I mean, they played. Florida and Tennessee have played for a long time.
Right, but I think division play helped make that, and Spurrier's addition too, made that suddenly a rivalry that was, the circled every year. Mm-hmm. For the last 30 years, that's been one of the. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I,
but
I would,
no, nobody lost a game in that rivalry because they threw a shoe.
That's true. Well, there have been some. Well, there was the year that the guy the guy drew the personal foul and it got Florida a chance to, or no, Tennessee got to kick. Okay, no, through a shoe was not thrown.
Yeah.
But there was a bizarre like unsportsmanlike call at the end that gave Tennessee a chance to re-kick a field goal.
There was so
they have lost a game in that fashion before.
There was that one time where they just didn't cover one side of a Hail Mary. Wasn't that a thing?
Right. Yeah. So
that's right.
Florida.
For sure Georgia.
I could be persuaded into Tennessee.
Okay.
As well for Florida.
I'm writing it all down.
All right. So that gets us to
that's two more.
That's eight new games.
Yes, I said we'd top 11.
Eight games through four teams.
Yep.
Georgia.
And if you're a fan of any of these schools and you feel like we're either leaving somebody out or going, wait a minute, not that team. Yeah.
I think people are on the edge of their seats figuring out how we're gonna land this thing. All right, so Georgia has Auburn and Florida, who we've already mentioned. Is there another Georgia game you feel like needs to be played every year?
I don't know. I think South
Carolina.
I think you keep those two.
I don't think that one either.
It feels like a reach. Yeah, it feels like anything beyond.
It does. They don't feel the same.
Georgia and Auburn
doesn't feel the same.
Tennessee.
That's the only one.
But if you do that, Tennessee's locked up then, right?
Yeah, Tennessee's already got three.
If we give them Bama,
Florida, and Georgia. Wow. I don't think you can give Tennessee, Bama, Florida, and Georgia, right? Like that's a stiff drink. That's a stiff drink.
To serve
Rocky Top. Maybe it's I don't know.
See, that's probably what the Big Ten ran into.
Who are you cutting if you had to cut one of those three off of Tennessee's schedule?
Who have we got?
Bama, Florida, Georgia.
Probably Florida. Golly, I'm giving Florida a break. I know.
Give Florida LSU and give Georgia Tennessee, because we ended up deciding that Florida Tennessee was bigger than Florida LSU. So you want to?
We haven't gotten to LSU yet.
Your issue is when we get to A&M, you got to give. Do you give them to LSU now?
No, I mean because I'm thinking LSU Ole Miss is one too.
Yeah. I think A&M's got old Big 12 rivals.
Yes.
That we can make them play.
Yeah.
With.
Yeah,
like that's where I'm.
Those two schools hate each other right now.
Sure, I wonder. I think we'll get there. Okay, so where are we? Let's go back to Florida for a sec. So we gave Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee.
Okay,
right?
Yeah,
you want to rethink?
All right, so
want to rethink Florida, Tennessee,
or Georgia, Tennessee? Which one is more important to keep? Florida, Tennessee. Or Georgia,
and if you lose Florida, Tennessee, you can swap it out for Florida, LSU.
You can.
That's where I'm kind of leaning now. Is I think we give Florida, LSU, and then we give Tennessee, Georgia.
But then LSU has who so far?
They'll have Alabama and Florida to start out.
Okay.
And I think we could probably find a third opponent for LSU.
I think Ole Miss.
All right. So hold on. So we're now.
All right. So let's do that. Let's pull Florida from Tennessee. I mean,
so yeah, we're still at eight games
Tennessee
after
Tennessee from Florida and leave Tennessee with Georgia.
We're still at eight games after Florida. Okay, so Georgia, Florida was already counted. Georgia, Tennessee becomes a ninth game. So we're at nine games.
So Georgia's locked out.
Yeah, no more Georgias.
Well, no, Georgia just got two opponents, right?
No, Georgia, Florida, Auburn, Tennessee.
Oh yeah, we've given them Tennessee. Yeah, we give them Georgia three opponents. So because we had Georgia, Auburn, and Georgia, Florida. So that would mean.
You might end that's up just going, one, just depending on what you do with Florida, you may come back and add Tennessee.
But that's one new opponent, right? So that's nine games through five teams, right? Because we already had the other two Georgia games already on the books. So nine games through five teams, Kentucky.
Well, I've got you. I mean, yeah, that works.
All right, yeah.
Kentucky.
Who's Kentucky's next? Do you have anybody that you feel like Kentucky needs to play every year?
Well, see, I keep coming. Tennessee's the first one it comes to.
I wonder if we're going to Penn State these guys.
Tennessee's getting too many people.
You probably have room for Kentucky on Tennessee's schedule.
There's probably some Auburn fans out there that want Tennessee.
I would love them back from years ago.
There's probably. I mean, Kentucky plays Mississippi State every year, but it doesn't feel like
that's a game you've just got to see.
I don't think I ever would have thought about that.
Do they have a trophy? Does Kentucky have a trophy with anybody?
Vandy?
Kentucky Vandy. Yeah, Kentucky should.
Do you want to give Vandy?
Kentucky Vandy should be on there.
Okay, so that's one for Kentucky.
And Kentucky's loving this. They're going. Carolina? The only team you can think of is Vandy for us.
Tennessee has already been given Alabama and Georgia.
And we're leaving that open for now.
Well, you probably need Tennessee Vandy.
You need Tennessee Vandy.
So Kentucky can't be one of Tennessee's three.
So South Carolina.
So I think maybe Vandy, Tennessee, maybe Vandy, Kentucky's the only one. Like maybe I've only got.
Congratulations, Kentucky.
They won the pony.
Wow.
Kentucky wins the pony, I guess, because I've got Vandy maybe as their only one.
That's amazing.
That'd be 10 games with Kentucky, so 10 games through six teams. That brings us to LSU,
who we already have Alabama and Florida and LSU's schedule. Ole Miss.
So that would mean that's an 11th game?
An 11th game, and we're halfway through the league. Of course, a lot of these should show up in the second half. We need to get, speaking of half –
We're a little more than halfway through hour number two. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, you can help us here as we continue on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so. We got to speed through the second half. Hope that a lot. And we weren't actually halfway. We only got to seven. So we've got 16 teams to get to. Where did we stop? LSU?
We landed on LSU as the I think LSU was
right,
the
who's next? Seventh Ole Miss?
Team. I believe Ole Miss would be your
all right.
Your
Ole next Miss. Team. I got Mississippi this. State and LSU.
All right. And where did we did we have? I think it was 10 games after Kentucky.
It was 11 after LSU.
11 after LSU. Uh-huh. Ole Miss was the game we added.
Yeah.
So that, you've now added one by putting
added
Ole Miss
one more
State.
With Ole Miss and Mississippi State. All right, so we got two for them.
Do we think Ole Miss needs a rival other than LSU or Mississippi State?
I don't think so.
Is there another game on the schedule that you think Ole Miss needs to be playing every year?
No. I think at some point you might, at the end of this, have a conversation about throwing Auburn in there for the Auburn Ole Miss.
I have no need for that. I mean, of games you just got to have. No, it's not.
No,
like
gotta,
one.
Gotta have. No.
No, I mean we've cut more traditional rivalries than Auburn Ole Miss off of this thing already. So hold on. So that makes 12.
Right.
Halfway
12 through State.
That's all 12 right. through. Or, yeah, 12. Well, is State's only one you think is Ole Miss
among the ones you mentioned already? Right. Wait,
that's 12 through Ole Miss.
Who else does? I mean, the team they played the most is Alabama.
Right. There's Alabama.
I mean, we got Alabama with three already.
There's Alabama. There's Auburn, who you've pointed out before.
Did we officially give Alabama LSU?
I don't know.
That was the one that you wanted to put in pencil.
Well, okay. Because
I think we did.
Because Auburn has played Georgia the most. The team Auburn has played the second most all time is Mississippi State.
I had three games for Bama
at the beginning. And it's funny. It doesn't feel like it does to them more. But it's two very similar schools that have a lot of similar – you know, background, but I mean, don't think it's a must.
As somebody that grew up in a Auburn household, like State was of the teams you played every year. So the West Georgia was the last team I thought about.
Yeah,
year
because
in, year out.
Because they weren't as competitive, probably why.
I would lean.
I mean, you look back through history, and it's been a long, long series that's had some, but not recently. So I'd say it's not a must.
I think I would lean towards maybe just giving State.
Just Ole Miss
Egg Bowl.
I'm with you.
As maybe the only one.
All right, so who's next?
Missouri.
All right, that gets us to Missouri. That gets us to 12 through State. So mm-hmm. now we're 12 through State, and that gets us to Missouri, who I would say you could argue.
Given nobody.
Did we give?
Them yet.
Did we did not give Arkansas?
No.
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Who do we have for Arkansas?
We
Texas and Texas A&M.
Missouri,
I give Oklahoma.
I think that's probably about
that is
right.
That is a long, long rivalry from the Big Eight that finally gets
and that's,
to play
and that's,
again.
I mean, if you're not giving them Arkansas, that's probably the only one. Like, I would say Arkansas, Missouri would be one that you could think about. And if you wanted everybody to have at least two, then maybe
Man,
Missouri,
I'm going
Arkansas.
Back to their roots of the Southwest Conference and then the Big Eight.
I think that's probably right, and that gets us to 13 through mm-hmm. Missouri.
And who's next? Oklahoma?
Oklahoma would be next.
Oklahoma gets Texas. We already had a Missouri.
I don't care about Oklahoma A&M. I don't know
I don't
if that's
either.
A game that you need to play. I'd
not
say
every
the,
year.
The only two that come to mind for me for Oklahoma would be Texas and Missouri.
Yeah.
If you want to introduce a rivalry or something.
But that's Oklahoma, Texas have been the Big 12, and Oklahoma, Missouri goes back to the Big
and
8.
We already had Oklahoma, Missouri on the board.
Man, we're flying through these quicker than we did.
Well, now some of these, less discussion. Well, some of these schools are already spoken for, right?
That's
like
true.
Some of these, the potential matchups we already discussed. So Oklahoma, Texas is a new one. We already had Missouri, so that makes it to
South Carolina now.
We're at 13 right through Oklahoma. I believe that would be if we already because we already had
13 or 14.
Maybe Oklahoma, Missouri. I don't know. This is where I was going to get nervous about the number. I think it's 13.
At least 13.
13 or 14. I think it's 13. South Carolina would be next.
We don't have anyone for South Carolina
yet.
We're
not giving anyone South Carolina. Would you
Clemson when they come into the conference in 10 years?
Would you need to call?
Absolutely.
Would you call the? I mean,
there's none that jumped. Yeah.
I mean, South Carolina has been in the league for a few years. Have they really
South Carolina
created a heated anything
if
with
– If you needed to give Georgia –
Well, but we're already playing them.
George's already spoken for, but I mean South Carolina, Georgia, because it's early in the year every year.
What would get under Georgia fans even more would be Clemson if Clemson were in the league. Georgia, Clemson had they've got a thing.
South Carolina, Florida sort of became a rivalry when Spurrier
sort of made it talked about,
kind of, but not. You know what I mean? Like I don't know if. No, I don't know if there's a team of Vandy.
How many we have with Tennessee?
You want to give them Vandy? You want to give them?
I don't have to.
I mean,
they don't really have any history with anybody.
They play A&M as their annual thing because they were the two sort of leftover programs that needed a cross division opponent every year. But like, that's not a. I mean,
Do you notice? Maybe it's because we follow a Western Division team that we're having trouble finding big matchups. Permanent matchups for some Eastern Division schools, Kentucky, South Carolina, Vandy. I mean,
Kentucky, South Carolina have been like
crap.
Who did you have as South Carolina's three permanent opponents in your system? Do you remember off the top of your head?
I've got it somewhere in here.
I saw somebody gave them Auburn recently.
Somebody recently did. I think I had them like Kentucky, Tennessee, Vandy, or something like that.
That's your Penn State. That's a team in this league where there is not a game it feels like they have to play every year. Like there's not one South Carolina game.
Because they haven't been. Well, that's sort of what it is with Penn State. Yeah. Although Penn State has made more of a mark in the Big Ten than South Carolina has in the SEC.
And South Carolina's had some. You know, they had that.
They played for the SEC title.
They had a 4-year stretch where they won 11 games.
That's right.
Every year, which is,
I think it was that 3 straight. Year where they finished the 3-year, fourth, yeah. which yeah, I mean, was
right.
Still
yeah.
blew my
I mean,
mind.
Spurrier had some great
but
seasons.
But they haven't really created that. Wow, remember those great games against? And
no,
who is?
I agree.
Other than they as bad South Carolina teams have figured out ways in recent years to upset Auburn a lot.
Beat Auburn.
They beat Alabama once, too.
Yeah, beat Alabama. Yeah. The last East Division team to do it in a regular season game, I think, was
South Carolina. Yeah. So, I mean, right now, I don't know of anybody that you just have to have for South Carolina. So that opens it up to play everybody. You know, they can do like we can look at the Big Ten model and now say maybe they can play a lot of teams 3 out of 4 years.
We gave Tennessee.
We'll come back to them.
We gave Tennessee, Bama, and Georgia already. And then
did
Vandy,
we give them a third?
Vandy.
Yeah, they got to have Vandy.
We decided we couldn't give them South Carolina,
Bama, Georgia,
or Kentucky
and Vandy.
Because you know, Tennessee Vandy feels like a game that needs to be played every year. I saw somebody
that also gives them a break after playing Alabama and Georgia, like Auburn.
Right. I saw someone propose.
You're not giving Auburn that break right now in this current.
Well, we only have two for Auburn, right?
Yes, but
that's what I mean. You'd need to give Auburn as much of a break as you can when you try to balance things.
And giving Auburn a break. Well, I don't want to like make up a rivalry for balance sake, right?
No,
so I do think if you're operating under,
if you're not having to go with three,
if you don't have to have three, if it's zero,
then you give them the next worst team that they can play every 2 year period.
If it's 0 through 3, Auburn probably has two teams. And with all due respect to the LSU rivalry, probably two teams they should play every year, and it's Bama and Georgia, and then you figure out the schedule from there. So for Tennessee, John Bonifer in the house. For Tennessee, I would agree it's probably Bama, Georgia,
Vandy,
and Vanderbilt. For A&M, we already gave them Arkansas, right?
Well, we got so Texas next.
Texas.
I mean.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Texas after Tennessee. So Tennessee would be one of the few teams we've given three.
Yeah,
but
Alabama's got three, Georgia's got three.
And I think Texas automatically has three.
Texas gets A&M, Arkansas. Texas has got three.
And I think that put, because we didn't give any to South Carolina, so that pushed us to like 16 or 17, depending on one or two of the games we're not sure about. Texas would
add Oklahoma. That's another game that you have to keep.
I think we already had Oklahoma because we went through. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. So yeah, they've got A&M.
A&M would be one that we haven't got.
Texas A&M. We already had Arkansas.
Do you think there's a third? Yeah, Arkansas. Okay. Yeah. So there's three for Texas that makes sense.
Yes.
One that we didn't have already. So that gets us to 17, 18.
Right. A&M already has Texas and
Already has Texas and Arkansas. Would not think they need a third.
I don't either.
And then Vandy, we gave. Did we give Kentucky Vandy? Didn't we decide that?
I think we did Kentucky Vandy and Tennessee Vandy. So Vandy's got two.
A pair of them, and I think we'd already mentioned both of them. So you're under 20. I'd say right in the neighborhood.
17, 18 games.
And there are probably some games that you could have decided if you wanted to.
Everybody but South Carolina has won.
And and the South Carolina ones all felt forced.
And three or four teams have three.
Do you
want to
give?
It's very similar. We have more teams with three than the Big Ten does.
To I guess, satisfy something for South Carolina? I mean, do you want to stick South Carolina and Kentucky together?
Because the only thing we had for Kentucky was...
Kentucky has Vandy right now in this system, and that's it. And South Carolina has nothing.
I mean, are those... I guess I don't follow the East closely enough to tell you how fiery the South Carolina Vandy... you know what? Those coaches have... Yes, give South Carolina
Shane
Kentucky.
Beamer. Yeah,
Shane
why not?
Beamer and Stoops have had a couple of words about sunglasses and dancing. You know, that was a pointed remark.
There we go. So everybody has at least one.
Stoops and
Beamer. And we're around 20 games, we say.
Stoops and Beamer have taken a couple shots at each other in public, so I think that's probably a pretty good call. You want to take the final break?
Yeah, we might as well. We'll come back and we can sort of look at the damage that we created here. Still time for you to join in. 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
Time to churn up some more yardage on the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan and Carter here in the studio. And yeah, it's been fun. We sort of went through and followed like the Big Ten model of trying to protect the biggest games. Now, the SEC, I wonder how many of these, this will be interesting. You need to hang on to this and see how many of these
I'll tape it up
are retained by the SEC next Wednesday when they announce the eight opponents for each SEC team.
Do you
team.
Want me to run through every team right
yeah,
now?
Let's do it again.
So Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, LSU. Locked out all three. Auburn, Alabama, Georgia. Arkansas, Texas, Texas A&M. Okay. Florida, Georgia, LSU. Georgia, Florida, Auburn, Tennessee. Kentucky, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, LSU, Alabama, Florida, Ole Miss. Ole Miss, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Missouri, Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Mizzou, and Texas. South Carolina, Kentucky. Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Vandy. Texas, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and Arkansas. Texas A&M, Texas, and Arkansas, and Vandy, Kentucky and Tennessee.
All right, as we go
through
the final
theirs. Number on how many that is, I think that's just
of
around
games itself.
I think that's 18 that we decided were rivalry.
I don't have that.
I was trying to, as you went through, trying to see of the expected contenders. You know, who's got the toughest? Who has the apparent, at least early on.
I mean, Bama and Auburn probably have the argument
Auburn,
for their.
Auburn has the toughest,
well,
I think.
Tennessee.
Alabama, Tennessee. Auburn.
Tennessee's got the same two.
Yes, but you're.
But they'll
but
get
it's
Vandy.
The fact that Auburn has a floating one that you don't know of right now
right.
is why.
I mean, Auburn for 24 would have those two and six others, whereas Tennessee would have the same two, and Vandy is one of their six others.
And Bama draws LSU on top of Auburn and Tennessee,
yeah.
which
Bama's,
would be a pretty
Bama's
good,
is
which
pretty
is very tough.
Pretty good draw too. I mean, there's a few in there that would not be easy. Who did we give? We gave Arkansas, Texas, and A&M.
Uh huh.
I mean that's a couple of perennial top half of the league teams. A
couple they want though.
Couple they'd be okay with.
Texas has Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and Arkansas.
Right. Oklahoma's only got Texas, right?
Mizzou.
Okay. Well, they've only got Texas. I mean, as far as
Bill keeps forgetting Missouri. They still don't feel like a conference. They still don't feel like an SEC team.
No, I keep forgetting.
11 years later,
I've asked this question before.
I like Eli.
What have they brought to the conference? Like, what are they good at? They were good at basketball last year, and they won the East twice, but got beat by Auburn and then destroyed by Alabama.
Yeah, but we don't ask that of other schools in the conference, right?
Like, everybody's mind would go to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's a baseball school that wins national championships.
Yeah.
Missouri won. I think I looked it up. They won the 13 and 14. Volleyball SEC championship, and then have not won an SEC championship in anything since.
They won the East, right? In the Auburn
in 13 and 14,
23, yeah, to back to back East championships.
Yeah.
And they've had basketball success
Not in the SEC until
before,
last year.
Before joining the conference, they'd been
right a, before.
You know, a right. Really in, bad in their, baseball
in time
school
in the big, time in the Big 12, but no, it's a that, well there are a couple of well, we were talking about the Mississippi schools before their recent run in baseball. Like these are the first team national championships that Mississippi State and Ole Miss have ever won in any team sport. Were the last two championships
Ole
in baseball.
Ole Miss has some claim Ole Miss wins claims in football back some in football, the day.
Yes. Right, which are I mean, sure. That the NCAA recognized championships, like the only ones that either of those schools have ever won in the last 2 years in baseball. It is stark how some places in this league and even I mean, you'd think about like I guess Florida would be one where like the championships outside of football and men's basketball, like the what they've been able to win in other things, it's pretty remarkable compared to some of the other spots in the league where they don't have that long tradition. I mean, even Vanderbilt, I believe. I mean, there's a couple of bowling titles and there's the baseball championship.
Wasn't that state's other championship was like a women's bowling?
I think it's Vanderbilt. I think Vandy's championship before the baseball team was Vandy's only national championship before the baseball team won the College World Series a couple of years ago was when their women's bowling team. I don't believe state had won a national championship in anything. Like
I think you're right.
Maybe individuals.
Vandy had won bowling before they won baseball.
Right, and I think Ole Miss had individuals who had won in like track and field events or tennis or something, but they did not have a team national championship before the before last year's College World Series. Who you got in the College World Series, by the way? Who you got winning the whole thing right now? 16 teams left. Feels like the SEC's got.
SEC's gonna get. At least three.
Couple of
I
them.
Mean, you know they got two. They've got two that are in because Tennessee. You've got two SEC matchups.
Yeah. Tennessee Southern Miss should be a pretty good series.
I think so. All right. I'm not 100% sure that you're going to get more than two SEC teams in, though. I'm not absolutely certain that Tennessee's getting through Southern Miss.
I mean,
Alabama's got Wake.
I really like this Arkansas team.
I think Tennessee's
going to get going in. I think they probably will, but I mean – it's not a sure thing. That is a tough place to go
I'm
play.
I'm worried Alabama might just get
does LSU
destroyed.
Does LSU have it?
They Will, might.
Does LSU have it beyond Skeens?
I don't know.
I don't
That's
know.
Their big question.
And
yeah,
then,
I don't
and
know.
Then, and then Florida, who's probably the safest bet of any SEC team?
Probably.
South Carolina's coming off the second most
they
dominant
are.
Regional.
They are, but yeah, they're going to Gainesville.
Vandy's pretty
That's
good.
That's true.
Yeah. We'll talk about that
they're
more tomorrow.
They're going to take on Caglione, who's a stud.
Vandy looked good earlier, but not happening.
Carter, man, appreciate it.
It's fun. Enjoyed it.
We are out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Back with you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.